We've like positioned our whole operating ethos and identity and brand around this idea of honesty. And if you talk to someone on our sales team, we're going to tell you the opposite of what you want to hear. We're going to tell you what you need to hear and what we know from working with hundreds of clients for a long time.
Welcome to the Authentically Successful Show, an entrepreneurship podcast that delivers you real stories and advice from successful founders and CEOs in various industries. I'm your host, Carol Schultz, a longtime professional recruiter, executive coach, thought leader, and creator of talent-centric organizations. Enjoy the show. Joining me today is Eric Boggs, founder and CEO of RevBoss, a lead generation company focused on outbound prospecting. Eric started RevBoss in 2014 with a mission to build a business that made clients and coworkers happy. Today, he leads RevBoss's effort to bring happiness to hundreds of clients and his employees, known as RevBuds, around the world. Eric spent 20 years of his career building SaaS companies and advising successful CEOs. Eric, what is the biggest problem you're solving for your clients?
Thanks for having me, Carol. The biggest problem that we're solving, I suppose it depends on the context or how high or how low you want to go. I think at a most basic level, we generate leads for clients, leads that lead to pipeline, that leads to relationships, that leads to revenue. I think at a higher level, we solve the problem of predictability and repeatability and scalability, which kind of turns into peace of mind and confidence for owners and founders of small and mid-sized business services companies like marketing agencies and PR firms and SaaS companies.
Yeah, and we're going to talk more about that, certainly. Tell me a little bit about, you got your undergraduate degree from UNC Chapel Hill and then got your MBA at the Flagler School of Business here at UNC, where you were Dean's Fellow. Tell me, and really from the time you got out of school, you've been an entrepreneur. So tell me about that journey to RevBoss in 2014.
Yeah. And so a lot of kids, I had like a lawn mowing business or tried to have a lawn mowing business, that kind of thing. But it's not like I came from an entrepreneurial family. Like my mom was a healthcare manager, executive. My dad was military for 30 years. So like it wasn't like something that I saw growing up. I kind of bumbled into this line of work through my first job out of undergrad. I was employee number one at a company called Bronto that was an email marketing company that had a lot of success. And I left at probably 25 or 30 employees, but they went on to have buffo success. But just seeing that growth from 3 to 10 to 15 to 25, it was just really eye-opening for me. I was really early in my career. And when I went back to business school at UNC Kingdom Flagler, people usually go get an MBA to get into consulting or finance or Wall Street or real estate or whatever. And my thing was like, I had a great experience at an early stage software company. I just want to learn some new things, take a break, and go back into exactly that. And it's a point of pride. I never interviewed for a job as an MBA student, which was like, I was like, I had a third eye. I was like you don't do that. Like people interview for dozens of jobs. It's like what you do. And so I had a very different experience because I knew I was going to get back into building businesses. And long story short, I built a software company called Argyle Social, had some success, had some not success. It didn't have a good ending. And that's a long story for another time, but that put me on the path to what became RevBoss. And, after my early experience at Bronto and what was really a positive experience overall with Argyle, I knew I was going to get back on the horse again. And spent a year as a hired gun consultant, just kind of like poking around, seeing who I could meet, what I could find. And over time, just settled on lead gen as kind of a productized service that I would offer to these clients I was working with. And before long, I'd built a small team, started financing some small software development, and now here I am running this thing. And it hasn't been a straight line. It's had plenty of ups and plenty of downs, and it will have many more ups and many more downs. But it's interesting work, and the people are great. The clients are great. My coworkers are great. And that's what really gets me going, and where my energy comes from is just being with other people and trying to make them success and trying to have as big an impact on their lives as I can.
Eric, you and I have had a long conversation about my feelings about lead gen in general and that entire business that you're in.
Yeah.
What, first of all, what is it about lead gen that got you thinking, this is what I need to be doing for a living?
Yeah. I think one, it's complicated, and things that are complicated are usually lucrative problems to solve. And, you know, when it was just Eric, you know, Hired Gun Consultant LLC, I could go all the way down to the level of like writing custom Salesforce code, all the way up to like talking to the CEO about how they want to, you know, do this or that, or help interview candidates. And so I operate from a very high level perspective, but can also like get down in the trenches with the best of them. And so it really was just an opportunity that presented itself, and that I kind of just kept following. And that kind of got me going. And that's what's gotten us here, is just solving the sort of next problem in front of us, and trying to be smart about it, and trying to have a long-term view with software and automation is kind of the underlying thesis behind the thing.
So I want to dig more into the, as I like to refer to it, the shit show of lead gen.
I think that's putting it mildly.
Yeah, I know. That's about as gentle as I can be. I personally, and I know we talked about this, I in the past had hired people that made lots of promises to do lead gen and just were horrible. I mean, the first company I hired, when I saw what they were sending out with the grammatical errors, the punctuation errors, run on sentences, sentence fragments, I called the CEO, and you know, you can only imagine what I did. They were a complete disaster. And I finally found somebody who is spectacular that I do use now. But I think, you know, you and probably he are in the vast, vast, vast minority. What is the problem with your business?
Yeah. I think there are, so I can rattle off a few, and I think some of them are people related and some of them are channel sort of context related. And those two things go hand in hand. I think for one, there is an ocean of people that can spin up a website and buy an outreach account and a ZoomInfo account or an Apollo account and just absolutely pulverize inboxes with emails. And, you know, that will create activity. The problem is that it's a Pyrrhic victory, right? Like it can create a lot of damage and harm in the short term and the long term. And two, it's not scalable, repeatable. And three, success with one client doesn't necessarily equate to success with the next client, because clients are different. Like, you know, your business and your offering and you as a person are different than another client that you might actually see as a competitor to your business, right? Your story is different. And outbound doesn't always work for everyone. Outbound meaning prospecting emails, display ads, LinkedIn, phone calls. It's a broad category, right? The reality is it's not always going to work for people. And so I think part of the problem is that you've got these bad actors that are just promising anything to anyone. And they know that I can skim the cream off the top. I can get, you know, 5, 10, 15, maybe more thousands of dollars out of a 2-month, 3-month pilot. And then I know that it's not going to work after that. And so I wouldn't call them scam artists, but it's pretty close to it. And I've seen it up close from, you know, clients that we work with. Like, I wish I had a dollar for everyone that said exactly what you said. You know, I worked with lead gen. I've been burned. It was bad. Terrible practices, terrible email. Like we hear that literally every day with clients that we work with. And so that kind of covers a little bit of the people aspect of it. The channel aspect of it is that I think a lot of marketers, particularly younger marketers, And a lot of owner-founder types that maybe aren't as experienced with this type of approach or channel expect magic. And marketing isn't magic. Outbound is marketing, just like inbound, paid, everything else, and it's hard. And so clients expect magic. And because you expect magic, if I'm a bad actor, I'm just going to tell you magic because I know that's what's going to get you there as a buyer. And that's just not a healthy starting point for any relationship. And if you dig deep into RevBoss.com, go to RevBoss.com/honesty, we've like positioned our whole, you know, operating ethos and identity and brand around this idea of honesty. And if you talk to someone on our sales team, we're going to tell you the opposite of what you want to hear. We're going to tell you what you need to hear and what we know from working with hundreds of clients for a long time. And we, if anything, sandbag our clients. We are very clear, like you're going to sign a 6-month agreement with us. You need to be comfortable with the fact that you're probably not going to have a closed deal at the end of 6 months.
I would agree. I mean, that's exactly how it's been with my guy. And that was the expectation. I knew what I do is really difficult. It's really difficult and it's hard to get them. It's sometimes it takes time to get the messaging right.
So it's hard. And a lot of times buyers, whether you're the VP of marketing at a 100-person SaaS company or the owner founder of a 10-person services organization, you want answers and you want them fast. And it can be hard to hear like, yeah, you're going to have to put up $25,000. And you know, we're going to do all the things that we know to do that are highly correlated with success, but I can't guarantee success. And, that's a hard sell to make. What it does do though, is it gets the right clients. It gets the right clients that have the right attitude, the right expectations. And those clients you can keep for a long time. The ones that are expecting the moon that you know you can't deliver are going to churn out and you're just going to be on a hamster wheel. And it's not a healthy business. And you know, the health and growth of our business, client testimonials on our website, reviews on G2, all those things kind of speak to the way that we operate. And it's hard because we do get painted with that brush, that you labeled an S show. I don't want to say the curse word because I don't know, maybe my kid will hear this all day or something like that. Yeah, it's a challenge for us for sure. And we don't bat 1,000, right? Like we're not perfect for every client. Like any services business, marketing agency, software company, you got a big bucket of happy clients and you got a smaller bucket of you know, yeah, this is going fine clients, and you got hopefully an even smaller bucket of like I'm not happy clients. And you know, that's certainly RevBoss just like anywhere else. But we just try to be really honest and forthright and earnest and responsive in the way that we work with our clients, and that's worked out well for us.
So your focus is on small to mid-sized SaaS companies and business service providers that are, you know, you've already mentioned this a couple of times, you know, looking for predictable and repeatable growth. What is it about that market that has you focusing there?
I think that's where the problem is pronounced. It's easy to get to the right buyer. So there's a lot of like selling reasons, right? Like we know that market well because we are that market. That's kind of where we started. We know how to speak to that market. I can speak directly to you, the owner, founder, CEO of the business that can actually make the decision and understand the pain. And you know, the inverse of that is I think something that you had described in our prior conversation, like selling to the enterprise. It's just so hard.
Yeah, we did talk about that.
So hard, mm-hmm. And it's so much more competitive, and the hurdles to get in the door and to get technology integrated and all of those things, it's just a lot more complicated. So, like in some respects, like it's a little bit of a path of least resistance thing. In other respects, I think that we have a unique offering and a unique voice for the problems that are different for, you know, Carol, the owner and founder of a consulting business, versus Carol, the VP of a business line inside of a $2 billion software company, right? Like it's just different.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you turn away more business than you close each month. Why do you do that? And how do you determine who to turn away?
Yeah. So we do that from a period of, because of a period of time where we didn't turn it away, right? And so this was earlier on in the days of RevBoss. It's like, oh yeah, well, let's just take the next dollar that walks in the door. And after you kind of make that mistake, you know, step on that rake and get whacked in the face, you're like, oh, maybe we should be more thoughtful. Or you start to see the pattern of like, oh, when we work with these types of clients, it just doesn't work. And so, you know, we take this posture of long-term client relationships. And so we optimize for that in our sales process and screen out the people that aren't a good fit. And it can be simple things like early stage software companies where maybe they don't have the financing or we don't believe in the founder. And in those cases, like, yeah, not a fit. Go get some traction, get some capital, come back to us. Or service providers in categories where we know it's just messy, like commodity products like telephony, that's really hard, and others. And so it's like category driven more broadly, but in some cases it's maybe individual offering driven. And sometimes it's the market too. Like the market might not be big enough, or there might not be a uniqueness or a story that we can sell on behalf of the client.
So do you go out and do research to determine, like, is the market big enough that it's going to make sense for us to be, okay?
Yeah. If you're having a conversation with our sales team, unless, you know, a lot of times, like, it's a total bullseye. Like, yep, we work with lots of clients that look exactly like you. We know exactly how we're going to do this. Very high degree of confidence it's going to work. If it's in more of a gray area, yeah, the person on our sales team would say, okay, this all sounds good. I need you to fill out this 5-minute questionnaire. Let me take that to my client success team. And we're going to do like a 15-minute, you know, gut check on it. And then I'll come back. And, you know, a lot of times we move forward with those. And a lot of times we're like, yeah, I don't think so. And that's fine.
If we talked a little bit about the competitive nature of the business, there's a lot of competition. Would you say, are you doing more outbound or more inbound to find your prospects? And how do you then differentiate yourself so that somebody's willing to cough up, you know, 25 grand or commit to 6 months? Because they've been burned so many times.
Yeah. So if you've been burned so many times, we'll frequently do a shorter period of time, particularly if it's like a total bullseye type client where we will take more of the risk. So that's part of it. And I think what I've described in terms of our selling posture, it's a breath of fresh air for a lot of the people that we sell to. And if you have been burned, or if you're talking to four other clients or four other prospective software companies or providers, and then you talk to our team, we're going to sound different. And that's because we are different. And so that's a big part of it. As far as like how we are growing our business, about 45% of our revenue is from referrals. So we just do a great job for our clients. They tell their friends, and we just like take what walks in the door. And that's wonderful. That's like a very healthy sign for any business. But, you know, we eat our own dog food, as they say. We ref boss for ref boss. We've got a handful of paid marketing campaigns that work. And those are really the primary things. We have a small BDR team that kind of snipes prospects. That's different than our core offering. But yeah, it's a mixed bag. But it's primarily referral driven, which is, you know, it's hard to predict and scale that. But if you do a good job, it just kind of happens.
So what about the hat culture manifesto?
Yeah. So, I've worked with companies that have great culture. That was kind of a founding purpose at RevBoss. And yeah, I'm sure there's a link somewhere in the show notes for this. And actually, I don't know the URL, but if you go to RevBoss.com, somewhere you can find values or hat culture. HAT is an acronym. We have hats that say HAT. And if I had a plan for it, I would have put it on for you. HAT stands for happiness, accountability, and transparency. And happiness is a slippery slope as a company core value, but we own it with the idea that happiness is a pursuit. It's not like a permanent state, and that happiness is kind of like why you live your life, and work is a part of your life, but it's not the most important thing in your life. And what you're really working for is yeah, your team, yeah, your clients. I don't know. Maybe for me, I hope not. But like, you're working for your family and the things that you want out of your life. And, you know, the thing that really makes you passionate might be horses or college basketball or burritos or I don't know what. And like, we just try to be very honest with ourselves that like, yeah, work's not the most important thing in your life. And that's cool. We're cool with that. You need to be good at it. We're all trying real hard to be good at it, in that it serves the other things that we're all about. So that's happiness, accountability, and transparency. They're kind of like two sides of the same coin. As far as transparency goes, I'm aggressively honest with our team. Every month I send a incredibly detailed, incredibly automated little secret report to all of our investors, and our team gets the exact same report. So cash balance, expenses, team knows everything that our lead investors know.
Good. Well, I'm glad you mentioned that, because that was my next question, which is, how have you funded the company?
Yeah. Yeah. So we raised a small financing round a while back, and we've just been profitable and cash flow positive ever since. And so customers and growth of what's financed the company, but I still report to investors as if, you know, they, you know, holding a knife over my head. They're not. But for me, that's the accountability side, right? Like, the transparency and the accountability work together, and one forces the other. And, you know, with our team, we have a lot of, systems and processes in place that, you know, holds people's feet to the fire in like a reasonable way. And it's all transparent and visible for everyone, and visible for our clients, even in the way that we deliver our service. Like, you kind of described, like, you didn't realize it, but like, messaging was going out with mistakes and things that you hadn't approved. Well, the way we operate is, you see the same reporting that we see. We all log into the same software that you know, RevBoss is kind of homegrown over time. And so everybody knows what everybody else is doing. And, you know, it's worked well for us, and it works well for me personally as the leader of the business.
Yeah. So you mentioned earlier about, you didn't say what they were, some of the mistakes at Argyle. But if you look at yourself as a founder, as a leader, and you look over your past, what are some of the mistakes that you have made? Why do you think you made them, and what did you do to fix them?
So a joke that I like to make now, and this is even with our clients, it's like, we've been doing RevBoss long enough now that, you know, you can try to do this yourself. Sure, you can. You're going to make really dumb rookie mistakes. We've been doing this for so long that we are making like the most complicated, high class mistakes that you can make. And they're still mistakes, and they're still problematic. And we try to, you know, honest about it and learn from it. And that's kind of been the same thing with my career. Like, early on as a founder, or even as an early employee, you kind of make dumb mistakes. And over time, as the business grows and you've got more people depending on you, you make more complicated mistakes. And, you know, you could probably put them in, you know, a number of categories. I can say, for me personally, the thing that I've learned that I didn't fully appreciate early on was, literally the only thing that matters outside of like, don't run out of cash, is the people around you. And with Argyle, prior company, worked with some of the best people I've ever worked with in my life. Also worked with the most toxic set of investors imaginable. And that is, you know, I was a CEO of the business. I was accountable for the outcomes and all the problems. And so I'm not sort of, you know, trying to you know, deflect blame or culpability or anything, but it certainly didn't help for a young first-time founder to be coupled with like incompetence at the investor level, and not like malfeasance, but just like stupidity in a lot of respects. And so that was a problem. And you know what? That's a people problem. That was me judging poorly the people that came along with the cash, and not realizing that those two things are both really important. And I think sort of the inverse of that at the time is just like overconfidence, maybe hubris, that like, I'm really smart. I'm working really hard. I can solve the problem. I can do it. Whereas now, I don't know, in some respects, I feel like I've maybe overcorrected on this, where I work a lot and I work hard and I try hard, but I don't do things, if that makes sense. Like, I let my team do things and try to trust and empower them. And sometimes I have to like lead down a path a little bit, but more than that, you know, Kayla runs her team. Zach runs the product. Mike runs engineering, and I don't even know what the heck he's doing other than, you know, I know enough to be dangerous, but like, the team knows the stakes. They know the expectations. They know sort of the general timeline and goals and where we need to be. And I try to stay out of it. And that is very much not how I did things, you know, a decade ago, for example.
How did you discover that you needed to do it this way rather than that way? What was the aha moment?
Well, you get whomped on the head a lot, and eventually like, wow, I don't like getting whomped on the head, and maybe I need to like evaluate what's going on and adapt the way that I'm doing things. So that's a part of it. And the other part of it is people. And you know, everyone on the management team at RevBoss is an internal homegrown RevBoss person. I might be wrong. I can't think through it quick enough, but I think everyone literally started at an entry-level position with the business. And what has enabled me to kind of step back and let the team run things much more so now than, you know, 3 or 4 years ago is that the people in those roles have just taken the roles and sort of grown to a point where, you know, like, some of the folks on our team aren't just like smarter than me, but they're operating at a rate and at a level where it's like, yeah, I can do what you're doing, and I'm glad you're doing it. Thank you. You know, and that's what it takes. And some of that is sort of explicit knowledge of how to do a thing. And other pieces of that are just like emotional intelligence and leadership and management style that I don't have, just because I'm me, and you know, other people are different. And you know, if I were running this team, I would not run that team as effectively as the person that is running it, because they are a better fit personality wise and that's a big piece of it too.
Yeah, that's terrific. So you've got about 52 employees right now. Tell me a little bit, since we're talking about your homegrown team, tell me a little bit about your talent strategy and where you've seen your challenges over the years. And are they the same as the challenges you're experiencing now?
Yeah. You know, when you think about talent strategy, you think about recruiting, and the thing that has been different for us, you know, RepBoss was sort of we existed as a pre-COVID business, right? But we were just kind of staggering through the dark, trying to make the thing work after a series of, you know, we went down one path and it didn't work, and we sort of rebooted the business and went down another path. And it was actually pre-COVID, you know, that Q4 2019 leading into Q1 2020, where I was like, oh, it's working. It's going to work. This is so great. And so when COVID hit, it was like, oh my gosh. We finally got to a point where like, yeah, it's totally going to work, that, you know, the rug got pulled out from under us. And that was very bad and scary at the time, but who knew that it was going to be like this huge accelerant, which it was for us. And recruiting during the COVID go-go time, it was so weird, because it was just like, you kind of got to take who you can get. And during that, and that's not meant to disparage the people that we hired during that time, but it was like a really weird job market, and our business was growing so fast, and I was so hesitant to believe in the growth, because we had had this like traumatic fall off in revenue and clients, followed by this really bizarre accelerating growth curve that we got kind of behind the eight ball, and then suddenly like had to hire in sort of emergency situations. That's what triggered us to become a remote business, was like, we just got to get people in the door to digest the growth that's happening. And everyone else was doing that. And so salaries got you know, everything got inflated from, you know, used cars to milk and eggs to construction costs to salaries for entry level account managers at RevBoss. And so the whole thing kind of got thrown out of whack. And, you know, it's a really different job market now. And so we were able to have a really different sort of recruiting and talent strategy. And, you know, we're hiring people that just have a lot more experience in what we do, which is really helpful. And early on, our strategy was much more like, let's just find a smart person and we can teach them how to do this. And we had a lot of home run hires with that approach. And we had a lot of like embarrassing swings and misses. And so the thing that we're trying to do is just connect on a lot more. And that's being a lot more careful and judicious in the screening process. More thoughtfulness in the job specification. And then, you know, more aggressive in the sort of training and onboarding where it's like, you know, at day 60, you're either in or you're out. Because, we, you know, we're at a point of stability now where we're not like emergency hiring for growth. We're kind of hiring at a reasonable rate based on kind of where we expect to be. And so, you know, if people aren't proving to be, you know, we had a person that we hired and then let go pretty quickly after we hired them because it was pretty clear. It's like, look, you're not there and you're not keeping up.
Right.
Shame on us in the recruiting process. That's not something that we would have done 2 or 3 years ago. That's different now. And a lot of that is just because we have a better sense of what good looks like and a better sense of who we are and how we work.
Right. So, you know, when you've had those swings and misses, can you point to what you were missing in the process?
Yeah. Some of it was just bad hires that, you know, every company makes bad hires, right? And bad hires doesn't mean it's a bad person. It just means this job and that person weren't fitting.
Not a fit.
In the way that we wanted. And, you know, people that don't work with us now have moved on to get other really cool jobs doing really cool things. And that's totally fine. And that's a part of it. So that is a part of it. I think the other blind spot I would say that we've had was recruiting in 2022, 2023, like it was 2021. Right. And that was a really different market, a really different job market. And I don't think that we realize like, hey, recruiting is still hard, but like the pendulum has kind of swung in our favor a little bit more. And so let's be a little bit more choosy and let's take our time. And, you know, we're not at a point where we have to like be really rushed with this. And so that's a lot of it. And, you know, we also, it took us a long time to grow to a point where we could have a sort of dedicated VP of, you know, people and HR. And I think we have a fellow on our team named Mason who was, you know, an early, like he was like entry level hire. And now he runs people operations and sort of all of those things. And, you know, we didn't have a full-time person that could do that for a long time because we were just didn't have it. We're, you know, we raised some capital, but we've been effectively bootstrapped since then. And, you know, filling that role and having someone that kind of thinks about that and cares deeply about that has made all the difference in the world too. And that's been, you know, that's a growing pain with any company that's going from, you know, 20 to 30 to 50. At some point, I would argue at some point, probably sooner than you feel comfortable doing it, you have to make that hire and dedicate that resource. And I'm almost certain, like we were late to do it.
Yeah, that's really interesting. What would you say is the most outdated advice in your business that maybe being given out?
Oh, gee, that's an interesting one. I hope it's not something. I hope I don't say something that someone on our team says. I think the most outdated advice would be something like it's a numbers game, which isn't entirely incorrect because it can be a numbers game, but I would argue that it's a resonance game. It's a process game, much more so than numbers. Resonance meaning, you know, I can send 5,000 emails today that are just like smash and grab, or I can send, you know, 500 emails today. And, you know, for a client, we generally don't send 500 emails in a day. We maybe send 50 to 100, maybe even less. You know, quality matters more so than quantity.
I agree.
You get sustainability and repeatability and scalability with quality, not scorched earth numbers game.
Yeah, I agree.
And you have to have process behind that to make it work. And you got to have RevBoss connected with your CRM and your marketing automation tool. And you got to zap data to AdRoll, and you got to pull data out of lead feeder, and like all that stuff kind of has to smash together so that it, you know, you kind of got an orchestra playing like a personalized suite to every recipient, not a heavy metal band, you know, banging out, you know, just deafening music to a crowd of, you know, thousands and thousands of people. And I say that as someone that deeply adores heavy metal music.
Yikes. So what are you most proud of when it comes to your organization?
I'm proud of my team. I'm proud that, you know, Mason, who I mentioned, was like a recruiter temp hire that now runs, you know, a huge part of the business. I'm proud that Zach, who also was a recruiter temp hire, worked as an account manager, had a brief tour of duty in sales, and now like partners with our engineering team and runs product. And, you know, Stephanie, she's the best seller that I've ever worked with. And I could go on and on. And you know, that's like people from the management team, but just knowing that, like, you know, people had their first kid working with RevBoss. People bought their first house working with RevBoss. People live a good life working with RevBoss. And yeah, that's what I'm proud of. And it can be a very heady thing to carry at times, knowing that like people's like 401ks and mortgage payments and 529s and whatever else depends on like my decision-making and leadership, but I don't take that obligation lightly at all. And so that's what I'm proud of.
Yeah. Where are your employees geographically?
Everywhere. Yeah, everywhere. I'm in Durham, North Carolina. We have a pretty big office, considering the fact that I think I'm here with one other person today. We buy lunch for everybody that comes in the office on Thursday, so we might have like 8 or 10 here tomorrow. I think we probably have 25 within like a reasonable driving distance to the office. But other than that, like, yeah, I mean, Oregon, Mexico, New York City, Lexington, Kentucky, everywhere.
So what do you do, and how often do you do this, bring your entire team together?
So we just did it in October, and we did it in the spring. So we did it 2 times last year. We'll probably do it again 2 times in 2024. Thought about adding, you know, thought about more, thought about less instead of 2, you know, 4 day, 4 or 5 days, maybe do 1 week long. I feel like 2 is a sweet spot. And yeah, we fly everybody in, we put them up in Airbnbs, and we just eat and goof off. There is work, some work, not a lot, but you know, we kind of close the business for those days and just like know each other and be with each other. And it's great. We've got an engineering team down in Mexico that we've worked with, for a long time. And I've never met Jaime and Ernesto, until this past October. They came to my house, they went trick-or-treating with my family and my kids and all of our neighbors, and they'd never been trick-or-treating before. And it was just so cool and so fun. It is something that always feels like the best investment that we make every year.
I love it. And I would agree. So I'm shocked by how many companies work or remote that they don't bring their employees together. And I think it's a massive mistake. So you spend your free time with your family. You, like I, exercise really early in the morning. You know, you do lots of activities with your kids. How do you work in the free time, the important time for Eric?
In short bursts. So I'm working off a few injuries. So I've been a little slack with my attendance over the past few weeks, but I'm generally like 5:30 in the morning. I'm in a workout cult called F3 that, it's like all my friends, and it's a bunch of, you know, it's like a bunch of like middle-aged guys that kind of don't have that time any other time. And so I work out at the crack of dawn. I listen to the music and podcasts I want to listen to after I drop my kids off at school and drive to the office. And then I play goalkeeper on a soccer team, an over 40 men's league soccer team that kicks off at 9 p.m. on Tuesdays.
In the summer.
So the time for me.
Or in the winter.
Yeah. The time for me is like weird times. And like we played last night and it was literally like 34 degrees. And it was wonderful. And it's like, you know, we got beat. I played well, but we got beat.
Yeah, well.
But it was still a blast because those are my friends and like the competition and like the physicality and, you know, yelling at guys. Like, I don't get that in other places. And so, yeah, the me time comes at odd times because other than that, it's like all work or all family. And that's it. I will say the one investment I do make is in a therapist once a month. Strongly encourage that for everyone, regardless of, you know, whether you're dealing with like an ongoing issue or a trauma or whatever. Like, I just do it as like a practice and sort of a personal well-being thing.
Mm-hmm. That's terrific. So if someone listening to this thinks, you know, your company's the cat's meow and they might want to investigate working for you, what should they do?
You can go to revboss.com and find out lots and lots there. And I'm on LinkedIn. We're on LinkedIn. Or you can send me an email, eric@revboss.com. And we just want to be helpful. We're just nice folks that like to help other nice folks. And we're not going to try to sell you anything. We'll just be honest about whether or not we can help.
Yeah. And we'll put a lot of those links into the show notes. Is there anything we haven't covered, Eric, that I forgot to ask you that you want to talk about before we sign off?
No, we covered a lot of things and then some. I like the question about what are you proud of? that's a good one.
Yeah. Well, good. Well, Eric Boggs, founder and CEO of RevBoss, thanks for being with me. This was a nice conversation. I appreciate your time.
Thank you, Carol.
Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of the Authentically Successful Show. Don't forget to click follow to hear more, and please leave us an honest review and rating so we can continue to improve and bring you more great stories. If you're interested in being my next guest, please check the episode description for information to apply. This is Carol Schultz. Thanks again for listening, and see you next time.